Hello, and welcome to another Moment with Eric Fleming. I am your host, Eric Fleming. As you notice, this podcast is coming out a little late, and I wanted to just kind of take a break from doing it and not trying to do it during Juneteenth and Father's Day. So I hope that those of you who are fathers and those of you who are African American enjoy those 2 days, right? And it's back to work. But those 2 days and just kind of monitoring social media, reading some things, led me to have some ideas about what I wanted to say in this podcast this week. And I guess the title for this podcast would be Fatherhood and Freedom, since I wanted to address those two issues. And for African Americans, those two issues are pretty important. But before I get to that, let me remind everybody that I'm on Patreon. And I would encourage people who listen to the podcast to subscribe to it. Help me out a little bit in trying to do some things that I want to do to expand the podcast. And I'm going to make this plea every week because I think it's important. You know, I know a lot of y'all subscribe to things that you like, right? And I hope that this podcast is one of the things that you like. It's not obligated that you do it, but I'm asking. And I see other people asking, and I may not be doing it the right way. I don't know. But I strongly encourage you to get more people to listen and to subscribe, because the more that I can invest into this podcast, the better it will be. And as I have stated, there's light at the end of the tunnel. So I can get back to doing some things that I want to do, like getting some more guests on. There are a lot of people that I want to talk to and I want you to listen to. And I hope that the people that I have been able to bring on, you know, have been edifying to you. So there's that. And you can also follow everything on all my, on the social media sites. Basically, if you look for A Moment with Eric Fleming, you can connect. If you want to just have one central place to connect with everything, you can go to MomentEric.com. That's Moment, ERIK.com, right? Because I still have friends and family. Well, not family. They've gotten better, but I still have friends and coworkers and all that that have known me for a long time, and they get excited and they spell Eric, or they let the auto spell on their phones spell Eric, ERIC. But it's ERIK. So MomentEric.com, right? Okay. So now I've got the housekeeping thing underway. Let me talk a little bit about fatherhood. And, you know, for the people that know me, know how I value Father's Day. But for the benefit of those listening that don't know me but follow the podcast, my story about Father's Day is I've been married 3 times. And they've all been failed marriages. In the process of those marriages, I've inherited 5 boys who are now young men. And thank goodness they're all okay. Despite the transitions that they've encountered in their lives, me being in and me being out. And they're relatively good people, right? For the most part. But I have one biological son. And the significance of him, other than just being my son, is when he showed up. His birthday falls in June. And the year that he was born, it was literally like days before Father's Day. And so I've told him that he never has to give me a gift for Father's Day because he is my gift forever and always. When it looked like I wasn't going to be a father, and I thought that I was going to be married to his mother forever, right? You know, I had to deal with the fact that she had previous children and that those would basically be my kids, even though I wasn't their biological father. But God works. And I was fortunate enough to be a dad. And just like, you know, with me, I was an only child. So I'm the only child my dad had. And it's something really, really unique when you deal with. Now, my son wasn't technically an only child because he had stepbrothers that he could play with and grow up with and all that stuff. Even though they were significantly older than him, they were young enough where, you know, they got to play with him and tumble and all that stuff. He used to jump him a lot, you know, especially when he got 2. You know, he wanted to rough and tumble with him and all that. And, you know, and they took that in stride. It was cool. He had built-in babysitters, you know. It's pretty cool setup for him. You know, but my parents didn't have that luxury. Well, we had a built-in babysitter in a sense that my great aunts lived across the street, so I wasn't the typical latchkey kid like a lot of folks in my generation where both parents were working. I had some place to go where I didn't have to be in the house by myself when I was younger. I had relatives that would watch over me and make sure I ate something before I went across the street back home once my parents got back from work. But, you know, of course, as I got older, primarily in high school, I could kind of stay in the house by myself, but I would always let my aunts know, you know, I was home. So, you know, so it was a different existence. I didn't have any brothers or sisters or anything like that. So it was just me and my parents. And, you know, my father did good. You know, he went through a period where he was struggling. And, you know, a couple of years, you know, we kind of missed because he was out either trying to do something or just trying to get away from the pressure he was dealing with. But, you know, he had been a police officer. He'd been bus driver. He sold real estate. He did computer stuff, drove trucks, had his own business. He did a lot of things to try to make sure that he provided, right? And so, you know, there were some issues that he and I have had throughout years, but I attribute that more to lack of communication and men being men, right? So, you know, but I love my dad and I love my son, and the feeling is mutual. With my son, it was a different experience because, unfortunately for him, the majority of his life, I was not in the house with him. He and his mom, well, me and my mom, his mom got divorced when he was still like a toddler, a baby. So the majority, all of his life, I have not lived in the same house with him and his mom. So the time that I did have with him, you know, whether it was the scheduled time or, you know, certain circumstances, were precious. It was not a given. Because at any moment, those of you who have been through divorces and all that, or never married, right? The mother of your child. Things happen. And, you know, your privilege or your ability to spend time with your child can be just taken away because of emotion. Right. So fortunately, especially through his formative years, we managed to maintain enough of a, excuse me, friendship, collegial friendship, if you will, to successfully co-parent my son. And like I said, He's a good, decent human being, and now he's officially a man. He's 21. So Father's Day means a lot to me. And one of the things that I wanted to make sure was that I was not an absentee dad, right? Because that was the narrative that was always out there. And when black politicians spoke and they got into the subject of fatherhood, they weren't addressing the success stories. They were addressing the absenteeism. And they get criticized for that, you know. But it's unfortunately for a lot of black children that that is a reality. And I shouldn't just narrow it to black children because it happens everywhere. Doesn't matter if it's an indigenous population, if it's white folks, if it's Latinos, AAPI, it happens everywhere. And it's an argument about the proclivity of it, but every group has experienced that unfortunate social condition. But the issue with black men is that it's been painted as a norm rather than what it really is, an abnormality in society. And just in time for Father's Day, what is the name of the organization? U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention came out with their National Health Statistics Report. And what that report said was that 70% of black males who are fathers basically spend incredible time with their children, even doing the mundane tasks of making sure that they're potty trained, right? They said 70% of black males are more likely to potty train, have a meal, go on a trip, whatever, with their child, as opposed to 60% of white fathers. So, you know, now, of course, numbers are relative because black folks make up 12, 13% of the population, and white folks make up 56%. So numerically, it'll be more white fathers. But statistically, percentage-wise, more black fathers are engaged with their children than white fathers. That's something that needs to be told, right? That's a story that needs to be hammered in, and it needs to be included, and not just in shows that are produced by black people. Entertainment, whether it's movies, TV shows, whatever, or even newscasts, right? That's something that needs to be shared with the world because, again, part of our struggle, and this ties into what I'm going to get into in the second half about freedom, but part of our struggle is how we are viewed. And the more that you dehumanize somebody you don't like, the easier it is for you to not like them and to do things to them, whether it's politically, socially, whatever, right? It's easier to dismiss or disdain something that you don't like, especially when you figure out a way to demonize it. And if the common perception in society is that black men are not good fathers, well, in a society that likes to purport family values, that's a way to demonize black men, right? And you say, well, they're not good fathers anyway. We can do whatever we want to do with them. The kids are not going to miss them, yada, 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 right? So when we have these statistics that come out, it shows that black men are more engaged with their children than any other group. That's something that we need to continue to push out there, in the hopes that we raise that number from 70 to eventually 100. Now, that's not realistic, I guess. That's altruistic, I guess. But 70 is 30% less than 100, so therefore you have room to grow, right? And there's room for encouragement. And then it all depends on how those young men respond to whatever circumstance they're in, right? Because there are young men who have had fathers who are not good fathers themselves. There are young men who didn't have fathers who are great fathers. It just all depends on how that person makes a determination on what they want to be when they become adults and they have that responsibility. So my message to society, especially in the black community or the African-American community, however you want to phrase it. I'll address that real quickly after I finish my thought. Needs to encourage fatherhood and continue to encourage fatherhood, right? Because, you know, 20 years ago, they were actually programs and money set out to have what we call fatherhood initiatives. A lot of that was geared toward correcting a wrong in our public policy, which rewarded people that were on government assistance to basically be separated, right? Because a nuclear family that was below poverty didn't get as much money as a non-nuclear family. And when I say nuclear, I mean mother, father, children. If one of the parents were gone, they got more assistance. So a lot of times, people didn't get married, right? In order to try to get more money for the children and to kind of live their lives. And it was more traditionally, the dads would be out of the picture and the mom and the kids would be getting the benefits, right? And, you know, if you deal with the scale economics, you get that, right? Because there's one less provider, so therefore they need money. But if both of the parents are unemployed, it's still zero. And so it really should be strictly income-based rather than family-based. But maybe when we get back to a government that deals with policy and not deals with personality and media likes, we'll address that, right? But I wanted to touch on something while it was on my mind about, before I get back to fatherhood, about this Black African-American thing. And maybe I should wait until I get to the freedom part. That's what I'll do. I will wait till I get to the part about freedom to address that. But I'm going to address this Black versus African-American thing. All right. So to me, being a father is one of the greatest achievements I've ever had. I've been able to do a lot of things in my life, accomplish some things I wanted to do. And there's been some disappointments. But the one thing that I did right was I became a father. And to see him grow up and now be officially a young man, I couldn't be prouder of that. And even more so the fact that I always nicknamed him my hero. The story goes, when he was born, you know, he was healthy. He was about 9 pounds, you know. And, you know, was alert and, you know, nothing visibly wrong with him. But it was either like the second or third day I was holding him and I could hear him wheezing. So I alerted the nurse. Nurse came and grabbed him. And then next thing I knew, they had put him in the neonatal unit, the ICU. And of course, his mom was still recovering from the childbirth and all that. So what happened was they found fluid in his lungs. And they were very concerned about the amount of fluid. So they put him in to see if they could get it out and stabilize a little bit, stabilize his breathing. So for about a week, now I'm visiting my son in the needle and nail unit. And of course, he's like the biggest baby in there, right? Because that unit is set up for, well, the term preemies, or prematurely born babies, or babies that are not fully developed, right? So, you know, there's like small, like 1, 2, 3 pound babies at the most, you know, and they've got all these wires and all this stuff hooked up to them. And it's very emotional, even if it's not your kid, just to go in and see that, right? But then here is my child, this 9-pound behemoth compared to the rest of them in that same unit. And I used to talk to him. I used to tell him, I said, look, these other guys are looking at you, right? They're saying, you know, they're trying to get to where you are as far as how big you are and all that stuff, man. So you've got to be their hero. You got to be their inspiration. When they see you leave, then that'll give them the courage to fight on and get to the point where they can leave too. Yeah, I'm talking to my child like that, you know, at days old. And of course, that was more reassurance with me. And of course, by then, his mom was in the room with me and she heard me talking to him like that. And of course, he made it. And it was a struggle with, you know, this first pediatrician that we had to deal with. She would never diagnose him with asthma. She was more concerned about him reading or whatever. And that was a struggle. We dealt with her for about 2 years. And the ironic thing was the nurse that worked for her and I served on a task force committee that dealt with asthma. And I kept saying, why won't this doctor diagnose my son with asthma? We know. And she said, I don't know. So we finally, you know, got to another doctor, and unfortunately it was while he was having an attack. And she diagnosed him with asthma and all that. The same asthma I had, by the way. Childhood asthma. And just like me, by the time he hit puberty, he outgrew it, right? But he still had some of the side effects, because one of the side effects that I had that he shared was eczema, which is, you know, if you, it was specific with pets. If we touched a pet, we had to wash our hands, because if we touched ourselves with it, it's, yeah. I don't have time to get into the stories, but yeah, those were kind of moments even with me and with him, you know, and that was something because since I had it, you know, similar to him, then I was, you know, I was always the model. If I was around a pet and he was around that same pet, then we both would go wash our hands together. So he got into that habit, right? But yeah, so, you know, just those kind of moments, you know, those are the things, you know, the different achievements, you know, to watch him, even during the pandemic, watch him across the stage when he graduated from high school and, you know, going up to college that he wanted to go to and visit and all that kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying? Those are those moments, right? When he tried to play sports, playing catch, all those kind of cliche things people take for granted, most people, you know, I was able to do. And I hope that, you know, the other things, to watch him, you know, if he decides to finish college, to go ahead and graduate, if that's another graduation in the picture, or, you know, him get married, all those kind of stuff. Those are the things that I look forward to now that he's gotten to the adult phase of his life, right? Where it's more of an advisory capacity rather than, no, you can't do that. You know what I'm saying? And my wish is that every child and every father has that experience, and especially in the Black community, right? So when that study came out, that really encouraged me to at least devote half of this podcast to talk about fatherhood. And, you know, when I look at my classmates and, you know, how they brag about their children on social media, and or I hang out with them, you know, and they're talking about their grandkids, wherever the case may be. It's cool. And it's routine in a sense in my life. But in the big picture, it's very, very encouraging. And my wish is that as time goes on, more and more, that number 70 gets higher. Because we need that. And we need that especially in dealing with the freedom aspect that we're going to talk about in the second half. So let me catch y'all on the other side. All right. And so we are back. So Juneteenth, right? The celebration and the holiday that is relatively new, right? We get to now have another day to celebrate our emancipation, or more officially, the news, right, of our emancipation. And I'm trying to pull up something here. And it's not working. But one of the things that I wanted to say before I got deep into the conversation was that if you do not have Medium on your phone, the Medium app on your phone, or you don't look at it on the internet, you need to hook up with that. The Medium is an awesome place, and I think I've mentioned it before, along with Substack, good places for people to get viewpoints that are not tied in with MSM or mainstream media, right? These are people who write opinion columns or historical pieces or whatever, feature stories, and you know, most of them are freelancers and they submit to either one of those, Substack or Medium. So if you, you know, if you really want to get some fresh perspectives, not to keep hearing and seeing the same old folks that you read in the New York Times or the Post or your local newspaper or on your local television or, you know, national TV, whether it's cable news or ABC, NBC, and CBS, right? Then, you know, I would encourage you to read those. And there were a couple articles, one by this guy named Zarin Burnett the third, and another one by Chris Manjopra, right? That really kind of set the tone for what I want to talk about. But the other thing that kind of set me into having a discussion about Juneteenth, and a lot of people, you know, have expressed their opinions one way or the other. And it goes back to, you know, the discussion or the speech that Frederick Douglass gave years ago, where he talked about that July 4th wasn't really Independence Day for him, right? So Juneteenth really is kind of that day for us as Black people in America. And even though there were some skirmishes in the Civil War afterwards, or, you know, during around that time, and the actual Emancipation Proclamation only impacted Confederate states for strategic reasons, right? And, you know, that there were other states that kind of did their own version of emancipation, whether, you know, like Mississippi did theirs like in May of 1864, for example. You know, this is the day that those folks, those slaves in Galveston, Texas, got that order. And I want to say the general's name was Granger. And it was, as he was reading off, this was order number 3 that basically said that you were no longer slaves, addressing them. And, you know, it talked about, I can't remember which article it was, but one of them talked about how the slave owners were reading that order to their slaves, basically telling them free. And some of them got so emotionally caught up that they couldn't even finish reading it because they were losing their slaves, right? And there were other states that in their emancipation things were setting up reparations for the slave owners as opposed to the folks that were enslaved. So, you know, so this holiday was created, and we know why it was created, right? It was overdue in a sense, because in the state of Texas, it's been a celebration for years. And it had been a state holiday for years. And then other states started picking up, especially when descendants of those Texas slaves, right, scattered. And they started Juneteenth celebrations in their local communities where they settled. And so eventually it kind of was an underground kind of holiday for Black folks, right? And it is a day of celebration. The whole concept of Juneteenth is to eat well, to dance, to celebrate. You know, it's like when people say about Martin Luther King Day, it's like they get a little skittish about celebrating. It's more of a day of service to commemorate the mission that he was on, right? So people kind of frown upon it. But it's January, and there's only so much you can do anyway, right, in North America. In the United States, because it's cold, you know, in January in most of the country. But Juneteenth, the whole purpose of Juneteenth was to eat, dance, celebrate. So if you barbecued yesterday, if you did all that good stuff yesterday, then you know, you don't have to feel guilty about it, right? You know, you did the right thing. You followed the tradition. You know, they talked about how they used to, the night before, they would gather around the tree and stuff, all the men, and they would marinate and season the meat and start the cooking process. So by noon on June 19th, the food was ready. And you know, the party can begin. So, you know, I hope that you followed the tradition yesterday, that you got your grills out and you gathered with friends and family and you commemorated the holiday in your own way. Now, the unfortunate political side of it is, for whatever reason, the people who identify as Republicans, primarily those who have taken over the Republican Party, what we call the MAGA wing of the party, have decided that the way to reach the base is to downplay or devalue the holiday, right? And it's not just a MAGA tradition. Well, we call it a MAGA now, but you know, when the King holiday, we literally had a state governor in Arizona who was like, nope. And in New Hampshire, nope. We're not going to celebrate Martin Luther King Day. And then of course in the South, because it was Robert E. Lee's birthday on January 15th, they were already celebrating Robert E. Lee's birthday, and then they had to flip it. And so in some states it's King Lee Day, and other states it's, you know, Leadership Day, or some name that they give it, you know, to keep Robert E. Lee's name up with Dr. King, right? But in some states this year, like my old home state of Mississippi, the state governor, they were state elected officials who basically said that they were going to have their offices open on Juneteenth, a federal holiday. They were going to open their offices. And people were upset because they felt that that was a thumb to the nose, thumbing their nose at Black folks. And obviously, the Republicans in Mississippi and in other parts of the country have made the calculation that in order to maintain their base, that's what they have to do. So you had people on Twitter saying it's not a real holiday. And they said this is a day to commemorate Christianity. I mean, just blatant disrespect. Because they've made the calculation politically that they don't need nor expect Black people to vote for them. But then you get Black folks like Candace Owens who join in. I think she actually used the term, this was like a ghetto holiday, right? Y'all go look that up, you know? I don't get that, you know, and especially in Mississippi because, you know, they make it a point to continue to celebrate Confederate Memorial Day and Confederate Heritage Month. So, and they shut down for those days. Those are state holidays. The Confederate Memorial Day is a state holiday, right? The state offices are closed for that day, but they wanted to stay open for Juneteenth. And for some reason, they don't think that sends a message. Or if they do realize it sends a message, they don't care how it's being perceived. Right? So the lesson here is that freedom is not free. And it is never given. You have to earn it. But the flip side of that is that it's inherent in each and every human being. It is the very spirit that dwells in us to be free and independent. It is our nature. And it's our expectation to be given the dignity that every human being should get, right? And why people who are elected to public office don't get that, and they're rewarded politically for that, is the most mind-boggling thing to me and a lot of folks, right? But we're getting caught up in the flexion stuff. And I had mentioned in the last podcast that I was concerned about Black leaders being more concerned about getting shot with needles than getting shot by bullets, right? But then there's this thing, and I've probably touched on it before, but there's this dynamic between Black and African that is raging on social media. If you follow the Black diaspora or the African diaspora, however you want to categorize it, on social media, there is a feud between Africans who immigrate into the United States, and the people who call themselves Black Americans. Like, these folks say that, well, the only way you should get reparations is that you can prove that you were descendants of African slaves. But because we have developed our own culture and traditions and all that stuff here in the United States, you know, we're unique. So we don't like Africans who actually are from the continent, right? And vice versa. There are Africans who immigrate to the United States and have these negative connotations of Black people in the United States. And, you know, and a lot of them line up with the conservative thought process. In other words, they parrot a lot of the stuff that these Republicans who are disrespecting Juneteenth, for example, push out there. Now, again, I'm a political junkie. So if you want to be Black and be a conservative, knock yourself out. If you want to be Black and be a liberal, knock yourself out. If you want to be Black and be communist, a libertarian, knock yourself out. And I hope that you've come to those conclusions from more of an intellectual upbringing rather than emotional or being influenced for lack of knowledge in any of those philosophies, right? I hope you're not doing it because my daddy said we got to be that way, or, you know, my friends do that, so I just do what they do. I want you to have your own independent political thought, and then we can debate issues that way. And, you know, as much as I don't like when Candace Owens says certain things or others like her, I do respect, if you understand her story and journey, and others like her, how they've gotten to be quote unquote conservative, right? There are some people that are critical and they'll say that they're sellouts and all that. I'm not into that. I've grown out of that, right? I'm just looking at this feud thing. And it really bothers me that there are African Americans, and I identify either or. I'm Black and I'm African American, because my ancestry, 72% of my DNA is connected to the continent of Africa. A third of it is connected to one particular country, Nigeria. So, you know, I don't have a problem identifying myself as African American, but neither should Zola Budd, right? The runner from South Africa who, after she retired from competition, moved to the United States and became an American citizen. She was born in South Africa, so she can be an African American too, definitively. But when you talk about people who are Black, right, or who have been classified as Black, those of us who have melanin in our skin or whatever, right? You know, I don't have a problem saying that I'm African American. I don't have a problem saying I'm Black, because I'm an American citizen. I grew up in the United States. I've never physically left the continent landmass known as North America. I've traveled throughout the country. I've been to Canada and Mexico, but I've never left the landmass we call North America physically. Other friends have gone to the Bahamas and gone to Europe and gone to Dubai, and I've never done all that. And I kind of regret that personally, because now I don't know if I want to take a chance to travel outside of the United States at this point, but it is what it is, right? So, you know, I think this is a destructive and counterproductive feud that we are having as we are trying to attain freedom and respect and dignity directed toward us. And I was getting ready to say, and I stopped my thought, Juneteenth was created to kind of tap down what was happening in the summer of 2020 when black folks were like George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and all these other murders that had taken place by people that are sworn to protect us, right? The oath that I took as a law enforcement officer to serve and protect the community, right? When people were going against that, black folks decided we're not going to take that anymore. And, you know, President Biden, once he got in, boom. Now, there are people saying, well, President Trump did that. No, President Trump entertained it. But as usual, just like Infrastructure Week during his 4 years, it didn't happen during his administration. It happened during the Biden administration. He was the president who made this a federal holiday. So that's why it's only in its second year. Had Trump done it, we'd be approaching five. Just do the math. Do the math. But anyway. So we know that it was more of a political appeasement. We get that. But it's a blessing. Just like I was talking to somebody the other day about, you know, stuff politically. Sometimes things that have bad intentions or not thought of in a truly genuine way turn out to be good things. And Juneteenth is a good thing to celebrate that historical moment, right? Where people who were enslaved, the last group of them finally figured out, well, at least the ones in Texas, finally figured out, y'all free, right? Y'all don't have to do that. Now, the problem, of course, was once these enslaved people were no longer enslaved, because they didn't have any inherent wealth, because they didn't have education, or at least functioning, you know, they had functioning education. They could communicate, but they, you know, were not literate. Then they were struggling. And then they created laws to arrest them for being vagrants. You know, they couldn't travel from one place to the next, you know, even to look for work. There were just a whole bunch of things. And then, of course, the black codes and the insurrectionists that, you know, emerged, like the KKK and the rednecks and all these other groups, you know. And even in the South, once during Reconstruction, black folks started gaining power, right? Political power. That really got scary because there was this fear. You know, this replacement theory thing is not something that just came up on Tucker Carlson's show. It's been going on for a long time. And that was the biggest fear, was that black politicians were going to think like white politicians and do to white folks what white folks did to us. And that still is the basis for the fear today, that all the good jobs, all the opportunities, all the privilege is going to be taken away from white people magically. And black folks is going to get it, right? And now we've got other ethnic groups in the mix in the conversation that they wanted to squash too, but, you know, time. And so when you hear these census projections that the white population will be in the minority compared to the collective of the other ethnic groups, that's why you have these issues about abortion and all that stuff. It ain't got nothing to do with life. Because life is more than just being born. Life is about quality, right? Equality and just good quality, period, right? So, you know, do with that. And so the other one, the you know, this that Chris, the article he wrote, hit me up, and I was like, wow, you know, when you break it down, like, the three things that inhibit our freedom. And, you know, one is, he termed the phrase the ideology of gradualism, right? This is what Dr. King wrote about in the Birmingham jail. That was the thing that really got him fired up to write that letter, was that the white religious leaders were confronting him and basically saying, slow down, you're pushing the envelope too fast, you're pushing radical change that we're, as a society, are not ready for. And these are the arguments that people were hearing 100 years before Dr. King went to that jail, right? In the midst of a civil war, even prior to the Civil War, when you had people like Abraham Lincoln, when he was running for the Senate and running for president, you know, saying, look, I don't think black people are equal to us, but I'm not down with the slavery thing, right? And so, you know, that was the pragmatism of American politics in the white community. Those that wanted to end slavery never really acknowledged that we were equal to them, right? They just wanted to stop that practice because basically everybody else on the planet was stopping it, and we were still the last ones to do it. And it took a war for us to get to that point, right? Citizens of America had to fight each other. Family members had to fight each other to end slavery in the United States, basically. The discrimination continued, but slavery ended, right? So, you know, Professor Manjopper was basically saying there's this ideology of gradualism, there's state legislatures, and then there's, which is the public policy piece, and then there's debt, right? And so if you keep progress on a pace that you think society can manage, if you don't intercede in these state legislatures to make sure that even if they push for these gradual steps, that they enforce them, like, for example, celebrating a holiday that celebrates the freedom of black people, right? And if you keep them in debt, right? If you keep them financially handicapped, for every $100 a white man makes, a black man makes five, right? Or every $100 in assets, a black man has $5 in assets, right? Then those people won't attain full freedom. At least not when they want it. If we can control how progress is, and they've done a good job of that, the gradualism. You know, it took 90 years, you know, to get us to the point where the Supreme Court said, yeah, well, maybe the schools shouldn't be segregated. Because obviously the black schools are not getting the same resources as the white schools. So the separate but equal thing is not working because the equal part's not happening. So maybe we try integration. That's basically Brown versus Board of Education, right? So it took 90 years to get to that point. It took 100 years to get to the point where the 13th and 14th Amendments were codified into law. Never mind that they were constitutional, but you had to get the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act to codify what those amendments talked about. You see where I'm going with that? So that's the gradualism piece, right? And the debt, well, we all deal with this, you know, the financial stuff, you know, laws that were passed like the Community Reinvestment Act, where banks are supposed to offer percentage of their assets into the communities where they set up, which is why strategically, you know, in places like Atlanta, you can't avoid it. Places like Chicago, you can't avoid it. Places like New York, you can't avoid it. Places like LA, you can't avoid it. But places like Billings, Montana, or Des Moines, Iowa, you can, where you don't have to set up banks in black neighborhoods, right? And even when you do, then you had public policy that flipped what community investment looked like. Instead of loans for businesses and housing and wealth development, it turned into, well, just teach them how to improve their credit score and you've met your commitment. Because the penalty was, if you didn't meet that, then you couldn't buy other banks. You couldn't do mergers and acquisitions, right? And so in order to allow these banks to do that, since they weren't going to do what the Community Reinvestment Act challenged them to do, they eased the burden. That's what happened. So, you know, and then, of course, you know, there's more blacks into the workforce. Then you saw the move to get rid of pensions and go into 401ks. Even the guy who invented the 401k say that was not the intention. The 401k was supposed to be a supplement to pensions, not a replacement for pensions. The guy who came up with the 401k plan said that, right? But that's what they did, right? And so, you know, it just, and that goes to the state legislators and Congress in general. And when you implement all these public policies that cater to privilege as opposed to practicality and the general welfare, right? I mean, you could really make a legal argument if you wanted to, if you had the resources to challenge it in court, that basically laws that cater to privilege and not to the general welfare is a violation of the Constitution. The first paragraph, the preamble, it's a violation, right? And I would love to see constitutional lawyers start creating this legal trail of the general welfare clause, right? This abundance of case law that challenges these laws that only cater to privilege and not to the general welfare. I would love to see that happen. But again, resources. So, you know, and with the volatility of state legislatures, with gerrymandering, all this stuff, you're getting these people in who, you know, it seems like every generation, they do what they can to stymie progress. They're not into the ideology of gradualism. They're into the ideology of stopism. They want to shut it down altogether, which feeds into gradualism, because then you have to go back and fix what they stopped, undo what they stopped, and then get back on the road. And then just when you're about to get back on the road, the next generation of these folks come in and shut it all down again. And the catalyst for this latest thing was the fact that Barack Obama took the oath of president, not once, but twice, served 8 years. And these people are like, never again. Right? Now, we'll elect a few that buy into what we're saying, right? Just for appearance sake. But I would really be shocked, right? If these same group of folks say we want Tim Scott to be our nominee for president. Now, they put Michael Steele in the position to be the RNC chair, to be that voice to challenge the black president, right? But when they realized that he had more in common with the black president than their beliefs, they ran him out, right? Because Michael Steele was about black folks. He wasn't just about conservative ideology. He wasn't trying to parrot the racist tropes. He was trying to get black folks to be Republicans and push a black agenda in the black, in the Republican Party. And they weren't buying that. When they figured it out, they got him out of there. Right? It's just truth. So when we celebrate Juneteenth from this point forward, we have to keep in mind that the struggle for freedom is still ongoing, and that we have to get past gradualism and start pushing for real action right now. Right? You can call us radical if you want to, but I think 400 plus years is long enough, right? And then if you count, as his brother Burnett talked about, if you count the black Spaniards who came to this country, even longer than that, right? It's time. Well overdue. And if you can continue to focus on building black wealth, right? You know, then, and that's, and the whole essence of black politics is to build black wealth. Let's be clear, right? There are social issues we have to deal with, but if a police officer is not stopping a black person because they're driving a Mercedes or a Jaguar or whatever, based on the black wealth, that helps black wealth, right? Because now it's not a stigma that indicates that we might be doing something illegal, right? When you get people in the mindset that, yeah, black people can drive luxury cars, that helps black wealth. When you get used to going to a bank and the person who manages your wealth is a black person, then it's not unusual to see a black person show up at that same bank having the same kind of discussion. Maybe that seems too simplistic for folks, but I'm just, it really isn't that hard if you commit to it. But if you still want to fight it, if you still want to say and fall into the belief that I don't want people who I think are inferior to me to replace me, right? Then it is a struggle for you to comprehend. And I'm talking my wife. It's a struggle for you. And I really wish I could get to that world that Dr. Mason talked about on the show and is preaching about and getting rid of this whole notion of race and all that, right? I really do. And I commend her, and I continue to encourage people to pay attention to what she's saying. Because that's part of the barrier if we just take that whole conversation out, right? We seem to be making more strides in taking the gender conversation out than we are the race conversation. That's a whole other discussion for another day. But until we get to that point, right, then we got to deal with where we are. And in this feud between black folks that are American citizens and black folks who have immigrated from other countries, stop. Just stop. Because in the view of the folks that we're trying to deal with, you're the same. You are exactly the same. They don't like black Americans because they feel they're going to replace them. They don't like black immigrants because they don't like immigrants, let alone ones of color. So the disdain for both of you. So whenever each one of you adopt those policies to quote unquote survive or to thrive or whatever, whatever you think your measure of success is needed to do that, that's a decision you have to make and live with. But it doesn't change their worldview of you, right? If it really comes down to what some of these people are advocating, especially after Donald Trump got arrested, that it's wartime, they're not going to distinguish when they're aiming. Are you an immigrant from Africa or the Caribbean? Or are you from Detroit? They're not going to make that distinction. They're not going to do it. You're in the boat together. Literally and figuratively, you're in the boat together. And that feuding thing, it's not going to help, right? It's not. So, excuse me again. We got to get past the infighting and focus on the real fight. We got to get off the distractions and focus on the real prize. And as long as I'm doing the hot mic thing, that's what I'm going to focus on each and every time. We've got to be directing our energy toward real freedom. Respect for us as human beings and give us the dignity that we deserve. Period. Don't disrespect our holidays. Don't ban our historical black books. Just respect us for who we are. As a matter of fact, we're more of an American story than anything you can imagine. To come from where we came from, to achieve what we've achieved. Just the concept that a black man got to be president of the United States. Just the fact that 8 black people are now CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. Just to see black folks in Congress and as governors and all these different things, mayors, whatever. We are the epitome of the American dream story. But because we don't fit the narrative of how the story was originally written, it's a threat rather than a celebration. All right. So just think about that. Just think about focusing in daily on being good parents to your children, on being good stewards of your finances, being the best person you can be, whatever your faith orientation is, and do something to uplift your people so that we may get to that promised land that Dr. King and others talked about. That land where we are truly, truly free. Until next time.